A little while back, it was a nice night. My family all went to bed, you know, wife, all the kids. And I found myself like, I finally get the TV, right? You know, if you have kids, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about, you know. So it was a nice night. And I got stuck. I don't know if you've ever been stuck in a situation where you're scrolling through TV channels, you're scrolling through Netflix, and you can't find anything to watch, right? You're like, oh, that might be good. Oh, that's kind of good. I don't feel like watching something like that tonight, you know? So you're going through, and I'm scrolling through, and I can't find anything. And that turns into the danger zone because you'll eventually settle, right? You're going to settle for something, you know, like a C-rate movie, and you're like, why am I even watching this? You know, I don't know if you've ever been in that spot. But I was at that moment where I'm like, okay, I'm going to settle, and I just need to go to bed, you know? And so I get to a show, and I don't know why, but it jumped off at me. You can go, Jeremy, to the first slide. That one right there, Black Holes, The Edge of All We Know. And I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And it was a documentary talking about black holes, and what it is actually is that's the first image of a black hole that's ever been taken. Up until this point, black holes were more of a theoretical idea and less of something that we actually knew up until this picture. And this picture is from 2018, I think. I remember it actually popping up on all the news channels, media, and everything because it was a really big deal. So the show goes in and starts talking about black holes, the challenges with black holes. If you go to the next slide, Jeremy, right, you got the laws of thermodynamics. I pulled this just off of Wikipedia to keep it simple because I remember the laws of thermodynamics being a lot easier in high school. And when I was reading this over, I only knew number one, right, energy can't be created or destroyed, which thus introduces the problem with black holes is it destroys energy, but it doesn't create as far as we know, right? Everything goes into a black hole, but we don't think anything comes out. Well, that ends up being the challenge that the scientists try to figure out. As you go through this documentary, you can go to the next slide, Jeremy. They end up with this weird idea. I don't know why they put a person in the middle of it. That's not the documentary. You know, you're looking at it like, wait, there's a person at the center of the universe. All the Christians are like, yes, we've been telling you this. That wasn't necessarily the idea, but you see kind of the, you know, the lines and the, even the directional arrows. Basically, they came to kind of a conclusion that black holes suck in everything, but they're emitting something, but they don't know what it is, and they haven't been able to detect it, they haven't been able to figure it out. All they call it is information because they don't even know what it is. I just found it so fascinating because with everything that we know, this idea of black holes just goes over our head. We have no understanding of what this is, but if you know black holes, there's a black hole sitting at the center of the Milky Way galaxy that's massive, and it's just sucking things into it, and we don't know what happens to it. To me, it was almost kind of the embodiment of this idea of just chaos. Like, how do we not know? It breaks all the laws. We don't understand it. Physics can't explain it right now, and yet it's there in our universe happening. I found it super fascinating. So go ahead, you can jump to the next slide. My name is Kit Maddox. I'm going to be preaching on Let There Be Light out of Genesis 1. My grandparents were Richard and Jerry Maddox, who attended this church for years. And it is such a blessing to be able to be here and share the word of God in the church that my grandparents had been a part of. In fact, the last time I spoke here, my grandpa was sitting right here, and I was making jokes with him. Gosh, this was 4 or 5 years ago. And so I'm super blessed to be able to be here. So let's jump into Genesis 1. Jeremy, you can take us away. Let me get caught up on my slides up here. So Genesis 1 says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was over the surface of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. There is a lot of really powerful things happening in Genesis 1. I'm going to just focus on two things, but there's so many rabbit holes in this opening line of the Bible that I could spend all day talking about it, and we would it's crazy. So the two things I want to focus on, the first one is formless and void, right? The biblical authors are giving us an idea that this universe or whatever we're living in is formless and void. I've had someone explain it chaotic nothingness, which for us in our perception, it's like, wait a minute, there's nothing there. How can it be chaotic? But to the biblical authors, it meant, you know, you had chaos, which was no organization, no rules of how things work or operate. And then you've got nothing on top of that, so there's not even anything there. You know, so there's not even substance, but even if we had substance, there was no organization to the substance. I have heard someone explain it, if you took nothing and put it in a blender and hit blend, you know, that's kind of the idea that they're trying to get across, is the universe, the world, or everything as they knew it was just this formless and void, right? The words that they use, Jeremy, you can go to the next slide on that. I pulled it from a lot of different sources. You got New King James Version, without form and void. You got formless and empty. NASB 20 is formless and desolate emptiness. That's an interesting way to put it. The Hebrew text is tohu vavohu. And that's essentially what we were talking about, is this idea of chaotic nothingness. So Jeremy, you can roll the next slide. So the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Right? The biblical authors, the second thing the biblical authors are trying to get across to us, not only is this formless and void, but then they're using very interesting words for at their time were a very big deal. But for us at our time, isn't nearly as big of a deal. And that's that idea of darkness, and then surface of the deep is actually, right, anytime you have deep, it usually was this idea of deep waters, right? So instantly they're thinking like deep abyss, deep waters, just a something that's deep, which in their time, deep things would be very scary, right? They had no way of knowing what was underneath the water in rivers or oceans because they didn't have technology for it. They had no way of, I mean, even then you think about thunderstorms, they had no way of predicting thunderstorms. And so all of a sudden, and you know, one night you could go to bed and you could wake up in the morning and you know, think if a hurricane went through and just wiped out your whole entire village. They would have never known it would have happened, right? Water was potentially a very scary thing, but at the same time, it was a source of life. Right, so they're depicting these ideas that for us doesn't affect us nearly as much because we turn on the TV, oh, it's going to rain tomorrow. We look at our app, oh, it's going to rain tomorrow, you know, or it's going to rain in a couple weeks, or it might snow, or oh, there's a hurricane coming, let's board up our walls, you know. We have ways now through technology to be able to manage water and in the same way manage darkness. Think of their time. There's no way to have light. Light was through a fire. If you've ever lit up a fire, it takes a lot of wood to produce any type of decent light with a fire. And so at night, you know, night was a very scary thing. You'd go to bed, and that's the perfect example. You go to bed and a thunderstorm rolls in, and you don't know what happens. It's a very scary thing. These biblical authors are doing a really great job explaining in a way that should last for a long time this idea of darkness and water and things being chaotic and potentially destructive. And then God said, and you can go to the next slide, right? So this I thought was a great example, darkness in the surface of the deep, right? You're looking at this hole, right? How many of you would jump into that hole? You know, like you're kind of like, oh no, I don't want to go into that, right? Dark, deep, scary, right? That's what the biblical authors are trying to get across. Now, for them, they use darkness and water as an example of something that's scary. For us, I would probably say something that would be scary would be a black hole, right? You can go to the next slide, Jeremy. Enter in the black holes, right? Very similar idea, right? So the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of a black hole, could be the idea. And then God says, let there be light. And light pierced through the darkness. It starts organizing the water to produce light. God starts organizing and creating order out of something that's chaotic and destructive. Right? If it was a black hole, the light would go through the black hole and pierce the darkness and set things right and back to order. So if we go to the next slide, Jeremy, yeah. So I highlighted some key words for us, but also just look at this process of what God is doing. He's taking formless and void, that chaotic nothingness, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. So you got chaotic nothingness, you got darkness, you've got deep waters, and then the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Notice also that transition right there. So you've got the opening, darkness was over the surface of the deep, and then you got this transition that the moment you input the Spirit of God, He starts turning things. He turns the deep into waters. He starts turning things, and it's the same exact surface of the deep, surface of the waters. He is now turning a chaotic situation into something that brings life, which is what water does. Okay, then God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning on one day. Okay, so Genesis 1, you can go to the next slide, Jeremy. Genesis 1 is trying to tell you a very simple but powerful idea. The nature of God is a God that brings order to chaos. We've got chaotic things in Genesis 1. God's a God that brings order to that chaos. The second thing is God brings light into darkness, dark situations, darkness just overall. He's coming and he brings light into those situations. And then he even adds in a God that brings peace to a broken situation. Now, that's a little bit of foreshadowing on the direction that we're going to go, but the idea of peace, a lot of times we think peace treaties, right? Right now we're hoping for a peace treaty between Ukraine and Russia, right? And the biblical author's peace would actually be a little bit different than our idea of like shaking hands, we're not going to battle anymore. For the biblical authors, the idea is if you have a broken wall, you come together and you repair the wall, you bring the wall back to wholeness or completeness. That's the idea of peace. It'd be the idea of Russia and Ukraine coming together and saying, now we're going to help rebuild each other's nations after this brokenness that we've just had. That's the idea of peace. That's what God's essentially doing to this broken situation. He's looking at the universe. It's chaotic nothingness, and God's coming and bringing organization to that situation and bringing peace to the brokenness that's happening. So, at this point, let me share a personal story. Jeremy, you can go to the next. Yeah, perfect. You're on it. 2011, so we're talking just over 10 years ago for me. Okay, we're still 2022. For a second, I thought we were 2023. It was like, oh man, we're flying by on time. This was one of the hardest years of my life. Nothing was going right. I had just come back from overseas playing volleyball. I didn't sign a new contract. I was playing professional volleyball. I was hoping to sign a new contract. Didn't sign a new contract. Came back, hopefully to start a career. I didn't start a career. I had a serving gig. My marriage was falling apart. I was having nothing but challenges. I was still pursuing the Lord, but everything was just broken and chaotic in my life, and I was just having tons of problems. I remember sitting at the stoplight on Cedar and Barstow. It's right across the street from Fresno State. It's that intersection that's right there. And I remember getting home. I had just served that night. It's 12:30 at night, and I'm sitting at that stoplight, and I remember seeing this sign of like, go to this club or, you know, nightclub type of thing. And it was just kind of a scandalous poster sitting right there. And I remember thinking, man, why does it feel like there is darkness encircling me? Why does it feel like darkness is just invading my life? This is not the way I planned for it to go. I'm dialed into the Lord. I'm seeking you out. But for whatever reason, darkness, I mean, I could just feel it. I was singing my 1972 Volkswagen Beetle, you know, just having one of those moments. And I remember distinctly thinking, you know what, God, I have not declared you on high in my life. And so I remember just saying out loud, Jesus, you are the King of Kings. You are the Lord of Lords of my life. I give you everything that is me. I give you my life. Guide me, direct me, send me in the right direction. God, I'm yours. Instantly, I mean, it was like a cloud of darkness that was trying to just press in on me and attack me. And I felt like it just relieved and started to pull back. From my wife's perspective, she was praying that, hey, God, I need you to show up in our marriage and turn things around, or like, we're not going to make it. And she said, overnight, things changed. And that's what God does, is God comes in and radically changes situations. Let there be light. And he changes broken situations, he changes chaotic situations in your life, and he turns them around, and he puts them on the right path, and he makes them whole and complete. My wife will actually be here at the next message, at the next service, and she's bringing our three kids. You know, God radically changed my life, but more importantly, Genesis 1 is saying God came to radically change the universe as we know it, the world as we know it, everything as we know it. But let's just not sit in Genesis 1. Let's let's see how this plays out in the biblical narrative. So Jeremy, we can go to the next story. So this is John 8, 1 through 11. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people were coming to him. And he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, and having set her in the center of the court, they said to him, Jesus, Teacher, this woman has been caught in adultery, in the very act. Now, in the law of Moses, commanded us to stone such a woman. What then do you say? They were saying this, testing Jesus, so that they might have grounds for accusing him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote in the ground. But when they persisted in asking him, he straightened up and said to them, He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they began to go out one by one, beginning with the older ones, and he was left alone, and the woman, where she was, in the center of the court. Straightening up, Jesus said to her, Woman, where are they? Did no one condemn you? She said, No one, Lord. And Jesus said, I do not condemn you either. Go, from now on, sin no more. Jeremy, you can stay on that slide. Don't switch. Sorry. Confusing message. Okay, what is happening here? This is one of the pastors love preaching on this verse, and there's so many good teachings on this verse. Here's what I, same thing like Genesis, there's so much going on here, I'm going to just kind of focus on one thing. And what I want to focus on is this, if you think about the timeline of events, this runs so parallel to another story in the Bible. I don't know if any of you can think of it. This runs very similar to the Genesis 3 narrative where Eve eats the apple and then God comes and says, what have you done? And guess what Adam does? She told me to do it. You know what I mean? So look at the same situation. You have Pharisees, a bunch of men, taking a woman who is caught in the middle of a sin or brokenness. Let's just say it's brokenness. They throw her at the feet of God. Right? Jesus represented God, and they accuse her of wrong. They accuse her of death, right? Because that was the end result of eating the apple, is death, right? Jesus, representing both 100% God and 100% man, is standing in the place of judgment, and he doesn't condemn her. You have a situation where you have this Genesis 3 narrative is replaying again. This is a very similar parallel situation. And Jesus does not go through the same process. He brings repairing to the brokenness. He brings peace to brokenness. He brings light into a dark situation. He brings order to this chaotic situation. Right? He says, I do not condemn you either. It's a powerful moment. The very next thing Jesus says, and this is one of those mic drop moments. You know what I mean? So if you go to the next slide, which is the very next thing. Jesus says, Then Jesus again spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. The one who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. After that, the Pharisees kind of just take off with, you're testifying about yourself, your testimony is not true. It's kind of funny, the Pharisees almost seem to change the direction on Jesus' testimony. This whole chapter finishes off with Jesus saying, you know, I tell you, before Abraham was born, I am. They all pick up the stones to stone Jesus, and that's the end of the chapter. But this is such a powerful moment. And even more interesting, I put a little note in there. I had to look it up. Chapters and verses were added in the 13th and 14th centuries just because it made it easier for us to track what's going on in the Bible. And so they added in things like this, Jesus, the light of the world. That would not have a chapter break. Now, I don't know about you. I have to make that mental note because I read that chapter break and I read it like how we read books in modern day, where you have a chapter break and you go on to a new idea or a new chapter or a new theme. That's not what John would have been trying to do in this message. So if you go to the next slide, I kind of combined them from 11 and 12, right? So she said, No one, Lord, and Jesus said, I do not condemn you either. Go from now on, sin no longer. Verse 12, which should pick up right after, and there's that little break in there, you can see the difference. Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. The one who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You have a broken situation, and Jesus fixes this broken situation, 100% man, 100% God, and reconciles a narrative that has been happening for thousands of years. And then the very next statement he says, I am the light unto this world. So when we look at Jesus' nature, so next slide, John 8 tells us, Jesus is, so same thing, Jesus is a God that brings order to chaos. He self-proclaims, or well, actually, this is what the Pharisees were arguing with, is not only does Jesus proclaim that he brings light into darkness, but also his whole point is God testifies the same exact thing, which we heard in the Genesis 1 narrative. This is a God that brings light into darkness, right? He is a God that brings peace, whole and completeness to a broken situation that we just saw. And then I added in a little bit of a note, it kind of comes in underneath the peace part, but he's a God that does not condemn. In Romans 8, 1, Paul's writing the letter and he follows it up with the same exact message. Therefore, there's no condemnation in Christ Jesus, right? The idea that God did not come to punish, penalize, or condemn you. Jesus came to set you free, right? Which falls underneath, bringing peace, whole and completeness to a broken situation. This is the same exact thing that Jesus did in my own life. But when you look at his whole ministry, that's what Jesus was trying to do with his whole ministry. He's coming to make things right and bring peace to a world. They called him the Prince of Peace, Mighty God. That's the message and the goal of Jesus. So now, if you go to the next slide, I want to make sure that I'm not just cherry picking verses that fit my message. And because Jesus is the light of the world, it is literally like one sentence, one verse in the middle of John 8, in the middle of the whole entire chapter of the book of John. And so it's easy just to be like, oh, well, that one verse makes, you know, works good for us. Let's connect it to Genesis 1 and call it good. But I opened up 1 John 1, and 1 John 1 opens with the same exact message, as you guys can see. I read it, but it's a little bit on the longer side, but the message of 1 John 1 is exactly that. This is a message we have heard from him and announced to you that God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. The Bible continues to reinforce this idea all the way through, that God brings light into darkness, that he brings order to chaos, he brings peace to the broken. Okay, Jeremy, next slide. Okay, how are we doing? We're building up, this is that moment, that lull in the movie where you're building up to the finale, and the finale's good. Because there's a third instance that Jesus talks about light. And I hope this one gets you as much as it gets me. Okay. Number 3, Matthew 5:14. Jesus says, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket. Instead, they set it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven.